Reading from Granthraj Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 4, texts 32 and 33, I was instructed we should read today. So we can recite responsibly, please, since I think most of our books. Text 32.
Evam bahu vida yagya. Evam bahu vida yagya. Vitata brahmano mukhe. Vitata brahmano mukhe. Karma jan viditan sarvan. Karma jan viditan sarvan. Evam gyatva vimokshase.
Please repeat. Evam. Thus.
Bahu vidaha.
Various kinds of
yagyaha,
sacrifices,
vitataha,
are spread,
brahmanaha,
of the Vedas,
mukhe,
through the mouth,
karmajan,
born of work,
vidhi,
you should know.
Tan,
them.
Sarvan,
all.
Evam,
thus.
Gyatva,
knowing.
Vimokshase,
you will be liberated. Translation: all these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. Please repeat. All these different types of sacrifice
are approved by the Vedas.
And all of them are born
of different types of work.
Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. I wondered what you were waiting for. Thank you. Purport. Is that okay? Krishna Kuan? Right? Harisha? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Different types of sacrifice, as discussed above, are mentioned in the Vedas to suit the different types of worker. Because men are so deeply absorbed in the bodily concept, these sacrifices are so arranged that one can work either with the body, with the mind, or with the intelligence. But all of them are recommended for ultimately bringing about liberation from the body. This is confirmed by the Lord herewith from His own mouth. Text 33, please repeat.
Shreyandrabhya mayad yagyaj. Shreyandrabhya mayad yagyaj. Gyana yagya parantapa. Gyana yagya parantapa. Sarvam karmakilam parta. Sarvam karma kilam parta. Gyani pari samapyate. Gyani pari samapyate.
Shreyan, greater Drabhyamayat of material possessions, Yagyat, than the sacrifice, Yagya Yagyana Yagyaha, sacrifice and knowledge, Param Parantapa, O chastiser of the enemy, Sarvam, all, Karma, activities, Akilam, in totality, Parta, O son of Pritha, Gyane, in knowledge, Parisamapyate. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different types of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches a stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. I'll read that again. That last class is beautiful. Without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. Depending on differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruit of activities, and sometimes gyanakanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. Gurave Gurachandraya Radhikayai Tadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. So, Bhagavad Gita, like the Vedic literatures, and this Bhagavad Gita is a ripened fruit of the Vedic literatures. It's spoken directly from the lotus mouth of Lord Krishna. Sarvopanishado gavo dogda gopala nandanaha parto vatsu sudhir bhokta dugdam gitam ritam mahat. Sripad Shankaracharya, who Srila Prabhupada quotes in his introduction. Interesting thing, this Gita Mahatmya, written by Shankaracharya. Did you know that actually the entire thing, verse by verse, was translated and put into poetry in, like, I don't know, 1967, 68, by Hayagriva Prabhu, Prabhupada's English professor disciple. And Srila Prabhupada wrote elaborate purports on each of these verses. It's never been published. I found a copy some years ago in the archives, and we published it. on our Krishna Katamrita Bindu email magazine. And we have some desire with the blessings of the Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas to make a book, a kind of introductions to Bhagavad Gita from different acharyas, and include that as something from Srila Prabhupada, so it's something a little fresh from devotees. So anyway, Sripad Shankaracharya, he says that Sarvopanishado Gavo, that this Bhagavad Gita is just like a cow. It's the essence of all the Upanishads. The Upanishads are considered to be the topmost Vedic literatures. And the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of that. Because this Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna. And he says, Sarvopanishado Gavo, Dogda Gopala Nandanaha, that Krishna has become like a cow. The Bhagavad Gita has become a cow, which is giving very nice milk. And Krishna's milking that cow, and he's giving the milk to Arjuna. Arjuna's the drinker of that milk. And all the listeners of Bhagavad Gita are also benefiting from that. Such a wonderful literature. It's a little difficult sometimes for us to understand, coming from a Western perspective, and I'm sorry to say, please forgive me for the Desi devotees who are here, but India today is largely coming from a Western perspective. The mindset and things, it's largely following the West. And a lot of the concepts, the conceptualization of ideas and things, is a Western concept. And that's for different reasons. It's a long subject. But we tend to think in things of black and white, because the West primarily comes from a Christian background, which there's God and there's Satan, and that's it. There's heaven and there's hell. But the Vedic literatures and Bhagavad Gita are so much, much more broad than that. And they have something for everyone. And we see this is a very, very important point given by our acharyas, given by Krishna. He speaks about this elaborately in the Uddhava Gita, the 11th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. His instructions to Uddhava, he says in the 20th chapter there, Yogas trayo maya prokta nirnam shreya viditsaya gyanam karma cha bhaktis cha nopayo nyo stikutra chit. Krishna said, my dear Uddhava, because I desire human beings to achieve perfection, I presented three paths of advancement. Three primary different paths. The path of knowledge, jnana, the path of pious work, karma, and the path of devotion, bhakti. There are no other paths besides these three. Of course, for those of you, I think all of you probably, who are conversant something with Srimad Bhagavatam and some literatures, you'll understand and know that actually, when we speak of karma yoga, it's a very, very vast subject. And there's so many different activities that someone might do within that general context of karma, just as there are many different types of yoga. And also, there are many different activities of bhakti. Mm-hmm. We hear primarily about Navavidhi Bhakti, nine processes of devotional service, of which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu narrowed down to five, and Jiva Goswami particularly emphasizes one, Kirtanakya Bhakti. That kirtan is the essence of everything, following the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Krishna himself, desiring all living entities to achieve perfection, gave these things. Now, later on, in the same chapter of the Gita, Krishna speaks an important verse, Prakritir guna samudha sajante guna karma su tan akrishna vidomadan krishna vin na vichalayat. He says that bewildered, excuse me, this is from chapter 3, text 29. He says, bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them. Don't disturb them. Don't disturb their minds. Although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. This is slightly mundane thing, but it has something to do with this. I can just mention, very interesting thing. Today the world is very concerned about Islamic jihad. But did you know that the roots of Islamic jihad come from British Christianity? And in particular here in India. When the British came to do business, first to India, they forbade the Christian missionaries from coming to India because they wanted to make money. And they were very open-minded. And you see paintings from that era, from the 17, 1800s, of British viceroys dressed in turbans, Islamic dress. And some of them would accept a number of wives, Indian wives. And they would accept many, many Indian ways, both Hindu and Islamic, which seemed to them to be something Indian. And it was a very, very broad-minded culture. Similarly, in Islam, if you went to the mosques and you studied the history of that time, the mosques were, we could say, a little bit of kitschery. Sometimes you might go in there and they would have some tablas and they would be doing some bhajan and they would have so many pictures on the wall and they were very colorful places. They'd imbibed something from the Hindus in India. But after some time, the Christian missionaries were pushing the British management leaders that you must allow Christian missionaries to come in. And finally, hundreds of thousands of Christians, they signed some petitions, and the government agreed. And they started allowing fanatical British Christians to come to India. And the first ones who came, I don't remember, there's one particular fellow's name. He was very, very bad. And he considered the Muslims and the Hindus to be manifestations of the devil and very, very evil, and everything about them was very bad, and deity worship was of Satan, and all kinds of terrible things. And they preached a very, very exclusive kind of thing, that it's our way, we would say in America, our way or the highway. You have to accept Christianity and God loves you, and if you don't accept it, you're going to burn in hell forever. They would speak like that. So at that time in Saudi Arabia, there were some Islamic leaders who were beginning to preach about jihad and some things. But it hadn't caught on in India. And there was one particular fellow, though, who had been exposed to this kind of fanatical British preaching from the Christians. And he went on Hajj to Mecca. And while he was there, he was exposed to this other kind of preaching. And basically, they were telling him that you accept traditional Islam or we'll kill you. You're a heretic if you don't accept that. And he fully imbibed it. And he came back and he started an underground movement here in India, which later became known as so many things, Al-Qaeda today and ISIS and so many things. Very interesting. It began from the Christians. And it began because of their intolerance. Whereas we see in Indian culture prior to that, it was a very, very tolerant place. And they didn't mind. I heard a story once. I don't know how true it is. But I heard a story that when the first Christian missionaries went to Vrindavan, they had a problem. What was the problem? Very unusual problem that they'd never found anywhere else in the world. Their problem was that when they would start preaching to the local people about the glories of Jesus, the people were so happy to hear it they said, tell me more, tell me more. And they would just go on and on and on, the preacher, speaking for hours and hours. But they would become Christians. They would say, oh, thank you very much. I'm going to keep chanting Hare Krishna and worshiping Krishna or whatever. But I really liked hearing that. That was really nice. I appreciate that. They had such open-mindedness. This is Vedic culture. And this is also, I can be so bold as to say, the concept in general that Srila Prabhupada had for our ISKCON society. And sometimes there's some controversy, just like in Islam. I mentioned there was some controversy between some extremists who were promoting jihad and some other people who were saying, no, Islam is a religion of love and like that. In every society, you'll have some conservatives and some liberals. It's natural, just like a magnet has two different poles. It's healthy for a society. But a healthy society is a society which understands the value of both. Both the liberals, because we need new ideas. We need to understand the world in some ways is changing. We need some dynamic ways to reach out to young people. Srila Prabhupada was extremely dynamic. It's ironic to me sometimes to see that sometimes the most vociferous critics of Srila Prabhupada, sorry to say this to all of you, are the sometimes the Babajis at Radhakund, who are the flag wavers of Raghunuga Bhakti. And what did they find fault with Srila Prabhupada for? He wasn't following the rules and regulations. This is a general fault they found. That he was allowing ladies to live in the temple. He was giving Gayatri Mantra to ladies, oh my God. He was allowing ladies to give class, etc., etc., etc. And so many other things with the Westerners. But Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he speaks about two different types of bhakti, namely Vidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti, he says that Raghunuga is symptomized by greed, and particularly by greed to please the Lord. When someone wants to please the Lord so much that they may disregard rules and regulations and tradition to please the Lord, that's Raghunuga Bhakti. So please think about Srila Prabhupada's preaching. This was Raghunuga Bhakti, what he did. He was breaking out of tradition. And I know some sociologists who studied the Hare Krishna movement. One particular, his name doesn't come to my mind, commented that he said Srila Prabhupada's strength was that he was always, we could say in America, out of the box, but always ready to do something new to spread Krishna consciousness. He said, but your problem today in the society is you're becoming too mechanical and too conservative. And you're too caught up in all the rules and regulations. Both things are required. And Krishna says this in the third chapter of the Gita, that different people are attached to different types of activities. And a wise person won't disturb them. He'll understand. He'll accept their position. This is where they're at. And he'll engage them accordingly. And this was Srila Prabhupada's brilliance in our Krishna consciousness movement. When some of Srila Prabhupada's very prominent and very powerful, don't think they were just whimsical, useless people, God brothers, went to England to preach, they considered it to be impossible. They wrote back to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. They said, the people here are just too fallen, and we'll focus on some of the royalty, some of the higher class people, but the common people, we can't deal with them. Srila Prabhupada tried something else. He went to the Bowery, and he stepped over dead bodies in places that stunk of urine and alcohol. To give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Srila Prabhupada really didn't see, in that sense, a distinction. He was ready to give it to everyone. And he did that thing. Because he understood this principle, which is spoken of here in this section of the Gita, that there are different types of sacrifice for different types of persons. And those sacrifices depend upon the adhikar, or qualification of the individual. This is a very big subject matter, which Srila Jiva Goswami has elaborated upon in Bhakti Sandarbha. Krishna says to Uddhava, again in the 20th chapter, text 7 of the 11th canto, Nivinanam jnana yogo nyasinam iha karmasu itesh anirvinachitanam karma yogas tukaminam. Out of these three paths, right? Yoga, jnana, and bhakti. Jnana, karma, and bhakti. Out of these three paths, those who are disgusted with fruitive work are qualified for jnana yoga. And those who are still charmed by fruitive work are qualified for karma yoga. And Krishna, in a couple of verses later, he further elaborates on it in a very important way. Tavat karmani kurvita nanirvidyeta yavatan matkata shavanadova shadha yavan najayate. He says, as long as someone is not detached from fruitive work, from trying to enjoy the fruits of your work and material enjoyment, he says, and, very important, matkata shavanadova, as long as they don't have faith in my kata, they don't have faith in Krishna kata, they don't have faith in Krishna bhakti, then one must follow vanashram dharma. They have karma adhikar. And I doubt as too many people would argue with us about this, but I think that Srila Prabhupada saw that the majority of people in the world today did not have bhakti adhikar. They didn't have faith, strong faith in Krishna katha, in Krishna bhakti. They still had material desires. They were still attached to trying to enjoy the results of fruitive activities. And so Prabhupada said, we have to have this vanashram dharma. And Krishna again, one chapter later, he says, Se sedikariya nishtas. Very important verse. Bhaktivinoda quotes this in a number of places. Saguna parikirtitaha viparyastadosa syat ubayor esa nishchayaha. He says that acting according to your adhikar, being nishta, and what you have qualification for, saguna parikirtitaha, according to your nature, he says that, you should understand, that's virtuous. And to try to do something which is not your nature, that's impious. And so this is the point being made here in this section of Bhagavad Gita. It's a very long discussion, very elaborate discussion given in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, in many places, about different levels of activities for people with different levels of faith. To make it simple, the purpose of all these different types of sat karma or pious activities is to give someone some bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Bhaktivinoda describes this in his wonderful book, Chaitanya Sikshamrita, where he says that people should plant trees, they should give water to travelers, they should make nice ponds and wells for thirsty people when they're traveling, they should make nice roads for travelers and that. Now you may ask, why is he telling you to do that? Those activities are completely mundane activities. They're not activities of bhakti. Bhaktivinoda explains. Because if one Sudha Bhakta, one pure Vaishnav Sadhu, walks on that road that you helped to build, sits under one of those shade trees that you planted, takes bath in that pukur that you dug, takes some fruit from the trees that you planted, or takes bath in the well, or drinks from the water, the well water that you dug, then you're getting some agyata sukriti. Now Jiva Goswami says that agyata sukriti is not enough to lead to bhakti. Now I'm using a phrase like all of you understand it. Perhaps some of you don't. It's a common phrase in ISKCON. Agyata means unknowing. Sukriti means pious activity. So some unknown pious activity. And our Acharya is described. This is what happens with bhakti. Jiva Goswami gives some examples in Bhakti Sandarbha from different Puranas. He says that once there was a crow. The crow had broken its wing. And suddenly a dog came. And the dog started chasing the crow to kill and eat it. The crow was naturally very afraid. The crow couldn't fly, so it was running on its little crow legs as fast as it could. And it happened to be, as it was running, it happened to circumambulate a temple of Lord Vishnu. The dog caught the crow and killed and ate it. And that crow took birth. Actually, it's an interesting thing and a really controversial subject matter. It's not bad to speak about controversial subjects. Just don't insist that you know everything about it. But it's nice to treat devotees with respect. A very controversial subject. Did we fall from the spiritual world or not? Here's a very interesting perspective on it. Jiva Goswami quotes this Purana, which says that that crow went to Vaikuntha and stayed for 100 years with Lord Vishnu. And then he fell down. But that Vaikuntha was not Nitya Vaikuntha. This Vaikuntha is called Prapanchika Vaikuntha in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami also elaborates more on it. It's also known as Dhruvalok. It's a spiritual planet within the material universe. And persons who get some bhakti, agyata sukriti, unknowing benefit, they get to go there. And they get to associate with Lord Vishnu. It's a pretty good deal. But because their bhakti wasn't purposely done, they have to come back again. And this particular crow took birth as a king. I don't remember his name. It's in the Vishnu Dharmotra Purana. And that king, in his next life, he was Jetasmara. He could remember his previous birth. And he was very, very fond of circumambulating the temple of Lord Vishnu. But there was a difference in his activity as the king and his activity as a crow. And Jiva Goswami elaborates on this. As a crow, his activity was agyata sukriti, unknowing benefit. But as the king, it was gyata sukriti, or activity with knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada speaks about this in the purport, in both of the purports. He says, in the purport to text 33, the purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge. So we have to come to the point of knowledge. And Jiva Goswami says first is agyata sukriti, unknowing benefit. Maybe one of you stepped on me in my last life. I was a worm stool or something, I don't know. But a Vaishnav stepped on me, I got some benefit, unknowing benefit. But then in my next life, if I want to take up bhakti, I have to begin gyata sukriti. Something where I'm doing it consciously. with an active mind. And Jiva Goswami says that further continues into Shraddha. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are two types of Shraddha, broadly divided. This is a little technical. Just fasten your safety belts. We'll be through it in just a minute. There's Lokik Shraddha or common faith. Everybody says that President Obama is a very nice man. He must be. Everybody says it. Everybody says this Maharaj is very good. He must be, because everybody says it. I just believe it. Better than that is Shastriya Shraddha. And we have, therefore, this knowledge begins, first of all, we have some common faith, but then we need to go deeper and have Shastriya Shraddha, faith that's based on Shastra. And that Shastriya Shraddha, again, Bhaktivinoda says, is two divisions. Shastra, Avardharmoyi Shraddha, faith which is based on Shastra, which is based on fear. If I don't, as we say in South America, in southern parts of America, if I don't do this, I'm going to burn. I'm going to suffer if I don't do this thing. I'm afraid. So they do that. And such persons, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, they're like an ass. Like Denukasura. Denukasura can't climb the tall tree to get the luscious fruits. And all he does, when he sees other people climbing them, he becomes very angry. And he starts making the noise that donkeys make, right? Not a very nice song. Hee-haw, hee-haw, right? And complaining. You can't do that. If I can't do it, I have no qualification, and definitely you can't either. Nobody can eat the fruit. Bhaktivinoda commenting on this, he says that ass-like devotees who are simply attached to regulated principles. Ass-like devotees are simply attached to regulated principles. They're like asses. They're like donkeys carrying a heavy load. So we don't want to be like a donkey. There's a second type of paramarthic Shraddha, which Bhaktivinoda defines as Bhagavat Lila Madhurja Lobamoyi Shraddha, which is faith which is characterized by greed, which comes from hearing from a Ragatmaka Bhakta, from a devotee who's awakened transcendental greed. So Jiva Goswami says, first is a Jnata Sukriti. You get some unknowing benefit. And our acharyas speak about this. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes a long verse from Padma Purana. I won't go in that direction right now. We can just offer obeisances to it. That there are so many different types of workers, and the Vedic literatures recommend different things for people with different qualities of faith because they have different types of adhikar. And what is the benefit of that? Srila Prabhupada once said an interesting thing, which some people might find a little controversial, like a lot of things Prabhupada said. He said, actually, somebody asked him, who are better, Srila Prabhupada, the Christians or the worshippers of Kali? The worshippers of Kali, they're doing animal sacrifice and things, or the Christians, they don't do that. Prabhupada said, actually, the Kali worshippers are better. Because there's some hope for them. They're within the Vedic system. And after some time, if they read some different books glorifying Kali Mata and Durga, and they may hear something about the glories of Mahadev, Lord Shiva. Oh, and they may develop faith in Lord Shiva. And from developing faith in Lord Shiva, they may read Skanda Purana, some other literatures. And in Skanda Purana, there's also the Vaishnav Kanda, which speaks all about the glories of Lord Jagannath and Puri. They may find out that Mahadev, Lord Shiva, is Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnav. He's a great devotee. And there's some hope they may develop faith in Lord Vishnu. And then by developing some faith in Lord Vishnu and hearing and chanting about Vishnu, they may develop faith in Krishna and in Krishna bhakti. So, it begins with some agata sukriti. They're doing something. They're worshiping some demigod, doing something. But they're getting some kind of benefit. Because they say, yatamat patamat, that all the gods are the same. Doesn't matter who you worship. We don't accept that. Prabhupada was very angry with that idea. But at least they're offering some respect to Vishnu. They're getting some kind of agata sukriti at some time by doing that. This is Vedic culture, which is of such a broad-minded culture. So they have some hope by agata sukriti. And then from agata sukriti comes gyata sukriti. From gyata sukriti comes shraddha. And from shraddha comes sadhu sangha, which is the next verse we'll hear in Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnina seva upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tatpadarshinaha. Krishna leads up to this verse. It culminates in sadhu sangha. It culminates in Guru Parashraya and taking shelter of Sri Guru. But it begins with just some agata sukriti. And Srila Prabhupada encouraged the members of our movement to engage people in agata sukriti. You know, I'm trying to think. When I first came to the devotees, I was already chanting Hare Krishna. But when I came to the devotees to surrender, actually, I was living in a cave. It's a long story. In a mountain. I was a caveman, a very wild creature, living on the wild things and vegetables and fruits in the forest, and chanting Hare Krishna, trying. But I decided this is really dry. I got to find the devotees. And I went down to Tucson, Arizona, and I met with a couple of Srila Prabhupada's disciples who were doing a festival of India, but they were all incognito. They had hats on and they were distributing prasadam. There's no budge on or anything. But I saw many pictures of Bhagavad Gita, many displays about India. And I said, hey, I know who you guys are. You're Hare Krishnas, aren't you? And he said, yeah. And then Charu Prabhu, Prabhupada's disciple, came over to me and he said, here. And he handed me a big box. He said, I want you to go hand these out. And I looked inside the box, and it was full of Bhagavad Gitas. And I was very astonished, but I'll never forget that. And I tried. I went out, and I was trying to stop people and give them a Bhagavad Gita. Now, you may say, oh my God, you can't do that. If you give a Bhagavad, you know, box of Bhagavad Gitas to someone who doesn't properly know the philosophy, they might say something wrong to someone. I have a humble correction. It's not that they might say something wrong. They will say something wrong. Guaranteed. But it's okay. As long as the bomb goes into people's hands, as long as they get this. And Srila Prabhupada said, even if they touch it, even if they see the book, they just see a devotee distributing the book. And we've experienced this. Hari Vilas Prabhu, when he was the temple president in Berkeley, he told us a story that they used to go to a particular park once a week, not far from the temple, and they would distribute prasadam. On the way, there was a Muslim vendor who was selling some foodstuffs on the street, and he really hated the devotees. And whenever the devotees would come by, he would start saying bad things about them and making fun of them. Hare Krishna, and like this and this. But after many years, something happened and he started to change. First thing was he started becoming quiet. And after a while, he was really quiet. One day, he called Hari Vilas over. And he said, you know, I have to apologize to you people. You're actually really good people. But I couldn't appreciate it in the beginning. And here he gave some donation, something to the devotees. He was getting some agata sukriti for so long, just by seeing the devotees. just by seeing them chant, he became purified. And by his making fun, Parihasya Namabhas, by his making fun of the chanting of the devotees, he also got some kind of benefit. So Srila Prabhupada has established this movement in this way. But Srila Prabhupada also wanted devotees to understand Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that unless you understand Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam, and it means you cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is very, very important. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're taught not to be casual devotees, but just to do some pious activity. But we're taught to be very, very intense. Tibrena Bhakti Yogena, the Bhagavatam says, we should practice very intense devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Godruma Bhajana Upadesh, he says that unless one practices intense bhakti, one can't get love for Krishna. So this is a tradition in our line. Today it's popular amongst many people, even many times the devotees. They read some self-help books, how to better themselves, from some learned people in the material world. It's not always a bad thing to take ideas from that. A common theme you'll find in such books is about the 10%. That there's a quotient in this world. 90% of the people are the ignorant workers. And 10% of the people are the ones who really become successful. In America today, I think it's something like 1% of the population now controls something outrageous like 20 or 30% of the wealth in America. Some outrageous figure like that. I don't recall exactly. And how do those people become like that? Because they're very, very intense. Now, this is not external intensity. Sometimes in our movement, we think, just do a marathon, Prabhu, just work hard. You should start sleeping for 2 hours a night. Or something. No. Krishna's saying here in this section of Gita, be yourself, be who you are. But we should cultivate a fire in our heart. And how do we do that? That comes first from a Gyata Sukriti, then Gyata Sukriti, and from that Gyata Sukriti, Satsange Prapyate Pundi Sukritai Purva Sanchitai comes Sadhu Sangha. And that Sadhu Sangha, from Sadhu Sangha comes Bhajana Kriya. We get some engagement in bhajan. All of these things come in a particular krama, a particular sequence. So we should endeavor in a very, very intense way, but we should do it according to our position. And that means when we come to the platform of Sadhu Sangha, the first canto of the Bhagavatam enjoins us. Chushu sho shadadana sha vasudeva kata ruchi shan mahat vipra sam mahat pujayat vipra punya tirthana sevana. You should do service to the Mahatmas, to the great Vaishnavas. And by doing that service, it's not just that they're going to pat you on the back and say, good Sankirtan devotee, you did good, you did your quota this week. Everybody can clap their hands. No. But you get something. You get some katha ruchi, some taste in Krishna katha, some taste in Krishna nam. And this is the difference between mundane prayas, we were just hearing about an hour ago, or over-endeavors defined by Rupa Goswami and Upadeshamrita. Over-endeavor, which can also be bhakti prayas or some over-endeavor in the field of bhakti. And something which is real and genuine. It comes from rendering service to the devotees. And this is something Krishna speaks about further in this next verse in this chapter. So we'll stop there. There's a few thoughts about these two verses tonight. Thank you all so much for listening. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Goprema Nandi Hari Hari Bol, Vancha Kalpa Dhruvischa, Kripa Sindhu Bhyevicha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Maybe some devotees have some comments or some questions or something, Prabhuji. Loudly, please.
7.28.
So this punya karma has to begin somewhere. So he's reading his famous verse. Yesham twantagatam papam gyaninam punya karma. It speaks about punya karma. And how this punya karma also leads to gyan, to knowledge, transcendental knowledge. It has to begin somewhere, and it depends upon our particular adhikar. Gurudev can see our particular adhikar. And he may see, you have karma adhikar, so you should work hard. You should make money for Krishna. You should sometimes, in the very beginning, Prabhupada had the devotees sometimes working jobs with non-devotees, making money. Now, I don't think that was just out of cruelty on his behalf, or even out of greed, or even out of a sense of necessity, because Prabhupada was dependent on Krishna. Prabhupada knew that Krishna would give everything, and Krishna certainly did. But Prabhupada saw they have to be engaged according to their particular propensity. And we should cultivate some punya within that our particular adhikar, whatever that punya may be. And don't disturb the minds of people who may have a lesser adhikar. Don't go and tell them your adhikar is less than mine. You only like vanashram dharma. You're nonsense. You can't speak like that. It's actually offensive. We should rather encourage them. Oh, this is very good. You also try to hear and chant. Srila Prabhupada wanted that. Always try to inject what the real goal is in things. But don't discourage them. Even so much, Srila Prabhupada emphasized, sometimes he would tell the devotees, don't defeat the Christians. Don't argue with them. He said, because if you defeat them, they'll just become atheists. And we've seen that sometimes. So better, we engage them. Oh, my dear brother, very good. I remember I used to sell books at LAX, the Los Angeles airport. And, oh my God, there are so many fanatical born-again Christians. And a lot of them hate the Hare Krishnas. And they're very active. They know how to disturb our Sankirtan mission, our book distribution. And every so often, one of them would just come up to you. And I would always figure it out. Because first of all, practically nobody ever walked up to me. When I was there with books, I had to approach people. They would come up to me, and they'd always be a little kind of nervous. And they'd always have kind of a, excuse me, I don't mean to offend anybody, but kind of a stupid smile on their face, which was a little kind of half nervous smile. And then they would say, excuse me, have you heard the word of the Lord? Do you know who Jesus is? And I would look at them and I would say, very enthusiastic, I'd say, are you a Christian? And they would always do the same thing. They would always take two steps back because they weren't expecting me to be so happy. And they would, yes. And then I would embrace them. And I would say, that's so good. You know, I've been here out here all day long. I've met so many demons, so many atheists and nasty people. It's so good to meet a man of God. I can't thank you enough. And here, let me give you some flowers. And I would give them some prasad and flowers. They won't take any prasad. And the same thing always happened. They would get this look on their face like something short-circuited in their brain. And they would just kind of wander away. And I didn't waste my time. And I felt very happy. I actually said something nice to someone and validated someone rather than having a completely useless you can argue with those people for 10 hours at a time, and you can defeat them, but they won't accept defeat. Like a person, you're having an argument with someone, and the other person wouldn't accept defeat. So finally, the one person said, took a hammer and hit the other man on the head with a hammer. He said, "There, I hit you on the head with a hammer." And the other person said, "No, you didn't." So how do you have a discussion with such a person? Our acharyas described that that's a discussion in a vitanda discussion. It's japa, vada, japa, and vitanda. Discussions in three modes of nature. And this is a discussion in the mode of ignorance. Don't waste your time. But if they're sincere, if they're interested, then we can give them something more. We can speak something more, because then they have a little more adhikar. And even devotees. It's a problem sometimes in our movement. We get a lot of information about bhakti. It's good information. We hear from wonderful sadhus. Very inspiring things. And then some devotee comes, "Oh, I had this problem." "I know how to solve your problem. You should do this and this and this." And they look at you and say, "Who the hell are you? Leave me alone. I didn't ask you for advice." You know, they just wanted someone's shoulder to cry on or something, because they don't really have faith in you. So we don't preach to them. They don't have adhikar for that. We just engage them according to their position. "Oh, it's very nice. You're doing your activities, you're chanting, you're doing whatever. You grow food for Krishna, you do this. That's very, very good." Just encourage them. We need to become very wise. Not just have information, but we need wisdom. Okay? Anything else, sister?
Guruji, we were just discussing, we don't have to try to be casual devotees. We have to try to be intense devotees, intense devotion. And Śrīla Prabhupāda said, with intense devotion, even in one lifetime, one can go back to Godhead. Can you explain something about this?
Yes, it's a little controversial. Because actually, Śrīla Prabhupāda sometimes said, in one lifetime, you can go back to Godhead. But in many places, in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahāprabhu, "Nadhanam najanam nasundaram kavitam vab jagadisha kami mama janmani jamanishra," he says, we don't care about liberation. We don't want that. What we want is bhavatad bhaktir ahoiti kitvai. In this lifetime, we can get something much, much greater than liberation. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, "Mukti tucha phala hoy nama basa hoite." Just chant nama basa like a Jamil did, and you can get mukti. No big deal. It's not hard to do. I heard a story that there was one very demoniac person who somehow his son became a devotee. And whenever he wouldn't go home, because his father would always say very hateful things about the devotees. Then one day he got a letter or something, said, "You know, your father's dying and you only have a few more days." So the son went home and he was there by his father's bed when his father left his body. And when his father left his body, his last words, he turned to his son and he said, "So, where is your Krishna now?" And he left his body. So that devotee later went to Śrīla Prabhupāda here in Vrindavan and told Śrīla Prabhupāda what happened. And asked him, Prabhupāda. And Prabhupāda said, "Oh, he went back to Krishna." Just see. So it's not so hard to get liberation. You can be a demon even and get liberation. Many demons got liberation. But we want bhakti. We want Krishna prema. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Okay? All right. Anything else is there? Okay. Thank you all so very, very much. I feel so blessed to be here with you. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.